Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and it's a delight to share with you the final part of the story of the amazing and talented Michael Dillon. If you follow the story of Michael through the first three parts of his program, you couldn't help but to be both impressed with his abilities and the strength of his professional beliefs, all of which have led him to being a world-renowned designer, glazier, and potter. He is a man whose work is recognised around the world, and in the first three parts of the story, we've been privy to this story from his early years in his hometown of Menangatang, Victoria, through to Bendigo, where he commenced his formal studies, and through to his experiences with Wedgwood in the UK and the USA. In this final part of his story, Michael, now much sought after, shares stories of his teaching experiences, whilst expanding on that part of his life not involved so much with the creative side, but more along his business side. We learn why he would, if not for the current pandemic, choose to live in Singapore. He also shares frustrations of having still so much to offer with both design and output, but like many older people, he's forced to face the barrier of the attitudes directed towards the aged. We pick up now with Michael reflecting on what he has achieved in his time. Let's say from the time you actually leave high school, which is, what, 16 or something, in a period of 7 years, you've lived almost a whole life, haven't you? You mean you've travelled around the world, you've worked with the best in the field,
well,
and you've become one of the best.
If it had been 10 years later, it wasn't safe. I could pick the safe and unsafe. I went into Europe again in the 70s, and I operated on the basis that prevention was better than cure. Regardless of whatever the situation was, I was very careful with people. When they spoke to me, and they do now, they don't have to tell me which country they're from. I can tell them which part of the country they're from. I can hear that, and I know it. I can't speak the languages, but I can pick it up just quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I was always on guard.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 60s, to travel around, it was okay. But by the time they started blowing up those planes in Amman in Jordan in 1973, and then when I went back to Italy, I went to Italy for 10 weeks in...
Was that for pleasure or work?
Pleasure. And... In addition to this, I've taught at Peran. I taught at Melbourne State College, which became part of Melbourne University. And I've also taught for 3 years at, it was called Institute Technology Mara. It's now University Institute Technology Mara in Malaysia. I've got permanent residency in Malaysia. I had a letter from the Agong, the king, the kingship in Malaysia rotates every 5 years.
Oh, okay.
There's 9 sultanates, so from the 9. So I had a letter of reference from him, one from Tunku Abdul Rahman, one from Badawi, the next one of the prime ministers, both of those. My best friend was Tunku Osman, the first Malaysian chief of the armed forces in Malaysia. He lived over the road from us. I got the permanent residency in 4 weeks, and I did that without any help from anybody. I went one Sunday into KL. I wanted to go and have cheesecake. I don't know why. I hadn't set cheesecake, not baked.
Yes.
And a nice coffee at the Equatorial Hotel. And I knew that I could read then. The Australian newspaper and Age were really thick. So this was Sunday. I knew the guy in the shop there had this Saturday edition of both the Australian and the Age. So I went in, I did all that. I went out on the balcony because I was used to smoke then. And I had everything arrived and whatever, and I looked up and I saw the Minister for Information. I hadn't ever met him, but I knew about him. And I knew that he's half Malay, father, Chinese. Mother, Chinese. His wife, the same. But his wife's family owned half the hotel. like most of the ministers, they're
yes.
unbelievably wealthy. The sources of the income are another matter, and that would scare the hell out of you if you know about that. So I thought, well, I'm sick of this, because the normal thing in Asia is you go through a third party, and the higher up you go, the more of necessity there is of that. So to meet this guy, because this guy was Mahathir has got a problem, this guy removed it, and that includes this. I don't mean he goes around and does it, but he makes the arrangements.
Yes. I have to say, for people listening, Michael made the sign of a pistol.
Right.
Yes. So you enjoyed your time in Malaysia?
Very much.
So you've actually lived in quite a few countries and you've visited quite a few countries.
I have.
You mentioned Italy. You went there for pleasure. What was it about Italy that you liked most?
I'd already been in Italy prior to 1979, and in 1979 I thought I need maybe to go back again to visit Florence. I had never been there. I'd been to Milan and Venezia and Roma and so forth.
Yep.
And Rome I love. So I thought, well, I'll have something just loosely planned. I'll go and stay in Carrara. Carrara's actually two cities, one by the sea and one the old city of Carrara up in the mountains on the way to the marble fields, the same marble fields that Michelangelo and Bellini and all the rest of them used for the quality of marble that's to be found there. I discovered that there was at one point in history, there was a large component of Scottish people who used to live in Carrara when the trading was in the way that it was then.
Right.
And you often see some Italian men with red hair, and that's where the red hair came from.
Right.
So I just enjoyed going to some of the churches, swimming, and then I had the stopover, of course, in Rome going up to Carrara and coming back, and I also spent some time in Florence, because that offered a gold mine of different things, both in terms of history, of art, and also in terms of the gold shops. The Ponte Vecchio, the bridge, there's little shops along the way over there, and I went to a few of those, and that was an insight into contemporary design and also to the interests that people have nowadays in terms of those types of personal artefacts.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Michael Dillon, who's been sharing his thoughts on the arts and treasures of Italy.
If you were to live in another country, would it be Italy? And if not Italy, where would you live? Given you've seen so much of the world, where would you live if you didn't live in Australia?
I would be governed, first of all, by safety. That's critical. That's one thing that I've learned.
We are still in the middle of a world pandemic. Let's just assume for our talk here that pandemic hasn't held. There's certainly a lot of other nasty things in the world. But if there's no pandemic, where would you live if it wasn't
Singapore?
Singapore.
Yes.
Which was basically the first place you went to after you left Australia the first time, wasn't
it? That's right.
So you'd returned back to almost your roots in some way of travel.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would like that, because I've spent a lot of time there, even though I wasn't domiciled there for 6 years in a row or something. And I've watched the growth and development of it, and the critical factor as to why it's Singapore and not Indonesia or Malaysia, for example, would be because of who was leading Singapore for a long time, and somebody that I have the utmost respect for, and that's Lee Kuan Yew.
You are retired now, is that correct?
I am.
When did retirement happen? When did formal retirement happen?
2004.
Did that leave a hole in your life?
No, it opened up a new... the last position I had was in Malaysia. I had a one-year contract with Royal Selangor International. I've got some of the designs here. and I'm going to show them to you. I had a whole year contract, and that was that, and it was for a special project.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Venifera. It was to do with articles that were new and fresh and that would be used for design in the wine industry, goblets, carafes, and wine pourers and so forth. I did 1,500 designs in the 1 year. Out of those 1,500, there were probably another 4,500 in my head because I can memorize the things. It's no problem for me to do that. And they put 8 into production for selling around the globe in the United States, Britain, Australia, and so on and so forth.
So when I said to you, did retirement leave a hole in your life? And you said no. Looking at you, given your age, you're a man who looks like he's still very vitally alive.
I feel frustrated because I avoid going near the art gallery. I avoid looking at sometimes design books and things like that because I look at something and I think, wow, I can do 100 times better than that. And I know how to do it better. And it's very limiting.
Yeah.
I've spoken about this to one of the owners of the Royal Selinger International Company. I wanted to, I know that I could get an order for 10, maybe $20 million out of Dubai in the Persian Gulf, and I would love to go there. Dealing with one of the royal families in Dubai. That is a project exclusively for them. And I know already that I can do it, but I'm not in a position just simply to go off and do it myself. I need their backing and that they would back me up. They have two other companies that they own. One is called Selbran. It's British, long established, deals in precious metals. And the other one is Comans, also based in London. All of their products are precious metals. So the sort of project that I had in mind for Dubai was silver, possibly gold in some cases, and no problem with being able to pay for it because they're very wealthy. And if they have an exclusive design concept, which is theirs and nobody else has it, this is even something that's more attractive to people like that. And I know I could do that. That's as far as metal and glass are concerned. As far as ceramics are concerned, the same thing. I would love to be continuing to be involved in design. And I don't need weeks and months to work out what ideas I have. I've already got them. They're there. You start that, it just comes.
Given your enormous amount of experience and quite obviously your skill, what is the barriers to you actually still using a mature age? Is it because people do see an age barrier? Why is it that it's...
A lot of that is the case.
I mean, I've only just met you, but sitting down and talking to you, I quite believe that if somebody knocked at the door now and said, come and work with us and get these designs, you'd be out in a flash.
Yeah, I would.
And I think you would do it. I mean, you could do it.
I would do it, but it would have to be the best. Now, this is very important. I've spoken about it a little bit, but not very much during my life. People often wonder what makes good design. And I always start off with the same answer. You have to be honest to yourself, inside yourself, to begin with. Some people I've seen operate and work don't do it like that. They are given a project to do, and the first thing they do is, as they can do nowadays, go to Google, go to a library, do this, do that. Start looking at what has already been established from other people. And this is a disaster. If people ask me, well, where's the finest design on the planet? I will say in Italy and in Scandinavia still. Both. I said, and the reason is because it's honest. I said, point out a piece of work, regardless of the medium, wood, metal, ceramic or whatever, or fabric, or furniture. And then ask yourself, how does this come about? Is there other stuff like this? And there isn't.
Yeah.
And the only way that it's come out is by them, by what's inside you. When I worked with these companies, particularly the last one, I was asked if I wanted a computer, because there's a system now where you can use a computer and you've got computer-aided design and all sorts of stuff. That's asking for failure. It's the wrong time to be using it.
It's probably fine for mass production, isn't it? And I don't mind this unkindly to the companies, but to places like Woolworths and, you know,
Kmart,
places like that.
And
yeah,
what have you.
Kmart. Yes. That's fine.
It is.
Yeah, but you.
But if you want to elevate,
yes,
higher, it doesn't have to mean that it's expensive. Every now and then, I mean, I can walk along Church Street there, and I see in Country Road they've got some ceramics. I mean, just the raw essence of a form. That's all that's needed. And the dictum that I like in terms of all of this sort of thing is, brought out by the Bauhaus, which was established in Germany in 1919, closed its doors in 1933, unfortunately, because most of the people were Jewish, and they, the top of the cream finished up in the United States, in Chicago and New York and Boston and whatever. The dictum being less is more. And to me, that sums it up. There's three words.
Yes.
That applies to not only to the project, as it were, but how the project is presented in the first place.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, promoting positive aging.
Do you think that it is possible that you are one of the last men of your kind in that way you see design and the use of the
no.
design? Or do you think that there are still young people out there doing it the way you...
I can only address one area that where I think that this whole notion is still alive, and that's architecture. From what I've seen, particularly recently on TV because of various types of programs, or the demise of a prominent architect, whether they're from this country or from Spain or wherever they're from, and the influence that they've had, that the notion of maintaining an innocence and a truthfulness with inside themselves still exists and is paramount. And when they're faced with a new requirement, that they approach it from that very clean position. It seems in architecture, from what I've seen, that that's still active. And I'm happy to see that. As far as product design, and my work is in the area of product design, I mean, I've seen it in schools. You'll have one person, and then suddenly other stuff starts appearing like that person's work. That happened to me. I did a lot of my work at home.
Yeah.
At any time, I don't care what time of the day or night it was, I did it. Yeah. And then I only presented it. I never took it in until the last minute. There wasn't any time for people to cheat anymore. I can't stand that. It's like the sandpaper incident. If you can't bowl the ball, well, then... Go home and have a rest.
Michael, our time is almost up. Can I just ask you one final question? Well, actually, a statement with a question attached to it. It seems to me that you've lived a good life, a rewarding and rich life. Do you have any regrets, anything you would have changed or done differently?
Yeah, I've thought about this. I changed my direction when I was in Malaysia. I opened a company. It had nothing to do with art and design. It was to do with business.
Right.
And it was specifically to do with business where both Malaysian companies and foreign companies, particularly companies in any case that were listed on whatever the stock exchange was, who were interested in joint ventures. What type of joint ventures? It's called true joint venture, where there's a complete passage of information provided and a whole lot of it, or it's in part. It may just be technical joint venture.
But in essence, what was it about that that you would have done differently? What was it that...
I would have protected myself better.
Ah. So that was one small failing in your life, is that you failed to protect yourself with the business that you started up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I had people that couldn't do what I did. People trusted me.
Right.
That went straight away. I had people borrow CSR, Pioneer International.
But how did that let you down, the fact that they trusted you?
Because I was asked by, in this case, Mahathir's nephew, to get an Australian company, like Leighton's or Multiplex, right?
Yep.
So I would be paid by Multiplex or Leighton's. But they, in Malaysia, they wanted me to tell them everything about what tactics or methods or God knows what else was private to those companies.
And you wouldn't do that?
I wouldn't do it.
Well, Michael, I think we've got enough stories in you that we could do this all over again, but our time has
hardly started.
I truly believe that. I think for everybody listening, it would have been the most fascinating series of programs they've heard through you. And can I just thank you for sharing some of your life? We can't get the whole story in four programs, but what we have got has been amazing. Thank you for being on Listen to Older Voices.
It's my pleasure, Robert. Thank you very much.
They've seen the wars that hurt the hunger. How will they choose when they are grown? What do you tell forever's children when it's their turn to hurt and heal? Whatever spins a grim tornado can also turn potter's wheel. Take a little clay, put it on a wheel, get a little hint how God must feel. Give a little turn, listen to it spin, make it in the shape you want it in. Tell with your life a bloody story, teach to their dreams not burning. It's not in bombs where lies the glory, but in what's shattered on the field. The potter's wheel takes love and caring, skill and patience, fast and slow. The works it makes are easily broken once they survive the potter's throw. How God must feel. Give a little turn, listen to it spin, make it in the shape you want it in. Someday some children will be digging in some long forgotten ground, and they'll find our civilization or what's left of it to fell. They'll find the weapons of destruction, but buried deeper in the hole, they'll find a message in a box, in the sand, the potter's bowl. Take a little clay, put it on the wheel, get a little hint how God must feel.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.